The Victorian Spring Carnival. There's nothing like it anywhere in the world.
Durston is coming at Gold Trip and got up. Durston has got up to win it for Mickey D. Rocket Horse. Rocket Horse has won it. Alligator Blood holding on. The Alligator win. Saki holding on. Saki back to back. Saki wins it. But it's Animo clear. I've thunderstruck late. Animo holding on. Animo. This time for the big A. Gold Trip is going to win the Lexus Melbourne Cup. Gold Trip wins it in a real staying contest for the ages.
For the next 3 hours, the newsmakers, the trainers, the jockeys, the breaking racing news. This is RSN's Racing Pulse. Here's Matt Stewart.
Morning, everyone, and welcome to Racing Pulse. It's going to be a big Racing Pulse this morning. 3 hours of Racing Pulse. I've only got these two guys for, what, an hour and a half? Matt Hill and Mick Sharkey. How are you, boys?
Well, you could go longer, Matt, if you want to negotiate.
Talk to Andrew Bensley, and I say yes. I don't know whether Andrew Bensley will say
How
yes.
How are you, Mick?
Yeah, I'm good, Matty. The nervous laughter gets me from Matty every week. Well, last week he sort of dawned on him, I think, on Monday morning with Mitho and I at the 3 hours, and he just went, oh, 3 hours. And then it was 3 hours every day, Matt. How was week one?
We had to get very creative. We had to go sideways. We had to invent segments that hadn't previously existed. So, no, it was...
You've had a bit to talk about, though. We've got Inter-Dominion in the trots. We've got the Greyhounds in full flight. The Jericho, of course, which I know you you love, and you were there yesterday. So, plenty to talk about.
Absolutely, absolutely. How was our weekend? We are going to, just to set the scene, John Sargent's going to join us, who wasn't at the Jericho yesterday, but his owner, Mick Orman, was, and there's a lovely story with the Anzac connection to John Sargent and Bastida, and Bastida got the money, a plunge winner of the Jericho Cup. I never thought I'd see
winner.
A plunge. $8 into $4.60 over the last 2 minutes. Daryl Horner was the jockey who looked, I wonder whether he thought what I thought, because I was on Bastida. At the 1,000-metre mark, I turned to my 19-year-old Oliver on the hill at Warrnambool and said, this thing's home. You know that's never successful, Hilly, when you do that.
And then we're crow.
Massive Jericho crow. And then we're going to talk about all sorts of other things as well, including talk about extending the Spring Carnival and new maiden races, Japan Cup, winter bottoms, zipping classics, all that sort of stuff. But anyway, how was your weekend, Matthew?
Excellent. Yes, I enjoyed Zipping Classic Day. The weather finally helped us out, didn't it? It was a really nice day out at Caulfield, good little atmosphere. And I think that day, it fascinates me, the Zipping Classic put 2 weeks later. Probably hasn't strengthened it, but the one race that I felt had a really good vibe about it was the Sandown Guineas.
Yeah.
Late in the day, big field. It had a little feel of a mini Caulfield Guineas for mine, and maybe for horses that aren't ready early in that season, early in the spring season to head towards Caulfield Guineas. Maybe it's another option. And I like the fact that, with the big field, I reckon we could name it something different. We can't have the Sandown Guineas at Caulfield for much longer. I'm going with the Melbourne Guineas.
The MG.
And put a little bit more money into it, and I reckon it could be a real focal point. It just had a good vibe about it there on Saturday, that race, and maybe because Vow and Declare had won 40 minutes earlier, and there was something really romantic about Vow and Declare. We've seen three British prime ministers, we've had a global pandemic. So the last time I backed a winner was about the time Vow and Declare won the Melbourne Cup. There's been a lot of water gone under the bridge since Vow and Declare won the Melbourne Cup, and it was his first win.
Sounds like it's been a tough 3 years.
It has been a tough 3 years. So, you know, there was something romantic about that, so I think we're all in a pretty good mood after the Zipping Classic, even if we hadn't backed him.
Well, Shark, I think at some point the rebranding has to occur, doesn't it? It's going to be hard to cling on to a Sandown Guineas and Sandown Cup, so I think Matt's on the right.
You can't call it the Caulfield Guineas, so you have to call it something else.
No, that's true. So I think that's something that will happen in time, and I think there'll be probably a box to put suggestions in, and your suggestion is the Melbourne Guineas. What do you reckon, Shark? It probably has to be changed at some stage.
Yeah, it probably does have to be. What I liked about it Saturday, and I know that the Sandown Guineas was definitely a highlight, and Seal and Evans, a really nice filly going somewhere, and it draws the Spring Carnival to a close in one way with, you know, the Zipping Classic, seeing those Cups horses and staying horses sort of heading out to the paddock after that run. And the Sandown Guineas horses, we look towards the autumn with those and everything else. But we spoke, Matty, on Friday about a couple of the minor races that were a little bit sort of off-Broadway, the Doveton Stakes, and what it meant if Jigsaw went and won again, and what it meant for the summer sprints, the Standish and things like that, that if he went and won, then suddenly you'd have this emerging, lightly raced horse that's always shown good ability, flirted with group company, went a bit into the wilderness for a while, now it's come back and gone bang, bang. We've got a little horse to look forward there, forward to there over summer with Jigsaw. And the two-year-old race, Matty.
The Merson Cooper.
The Blue Diamond, I know we get carried away sometimes, but the Blue Diamond series starts in 8 weeks. Now, there we are, the Merson Cooper, which can throw forward a really nice horse, really nice two-year-old. Maybe the winner was a little lucky with a couple of unlucky runners behind it, but these horses get a look at Caulfield before the Blue Diamond series. They go off now. We sort of move into that two-year-old season with the Magic Millions and everything else. It just, I think it throws forward with those two races to that summer series of racing to give us that
for sure
separation, I guess, between the main Victorian carnival.
And you mentioned the Doveton Stakes, another great race over Cup Weeks, the Century Stakes. They're both 1,000-metre sprints because we start the spring with the Moya and we tend to go up to 1,200-metre Group 1s. And those 5 furlong horses, we tend to really ignore. And that, so we get to the Doveton Stakes, and it's always a good race. I agree with you. The only thing is, how long can we sustain the mojo for? Like, it gets to a stage where every sport has to have a lull. You can't have a six-month spring carnival. So that's the big issue with it. And of course, you ask the trainers, who are there on the coalface every morning. And the big question with the spring carnival is the training of horses and the tracks that they are starting to get moving on in July, August. They're usually wet tracks. So they get into a spring carnival underprepared, and I'm sure a lot of the trainers are behind possibly moving the bigger races back a little. I was never really against moving the carnival back. I'm just against flipping races around. I think they have to stay the way they are.
I reckon this is a good conversation to have after nine, because I think it's a bit involved. There's a bit of a domino effect of some of these ideas, and if you do it, what do you replace? There are things that are happening now that are wonderful. So what do you do if you wipe the floor and then extend something that maybe for the tolerance of the fans, maybe it's a risk to extend? So we will talk about that a little bit later, because it's a conversation that's growing. But back to the Jericho Cup, and Johnny Sargent's on the line, but let's set the scene for Batista by listening to Rick McIntosh's Last Stages of the Jericho.
Bastina on the outside is after it. Body is pocketed. Eppie's Hill back nearer the inside. Bastina down the outside. The New South Welshman is after Eppie's Hill. Boxing on Royal Crown and the Ratlin Bog and the Kiwi Body. But Bastina hit the lead. And Bastina has come all the way from New South Wales and taken the Jericho Cup. 2 lengths to Body. Eppie's Hill.
And taken the money too. This was one of the most extraordinary chapters of the Jericho Cup, was the plunge. And Johnny Sargent, I think this has been a well-executed plan in more ways than one. He joins us. Sarge, what a great name, your surname, given it's a Jericho Cup, paying tribute to the to the Anzacs. Morning, Sarge.
Oh, no, good morning, guys.
Was this a well-executed attack on a race you wanted to win, but also a well-executed plunge from the stable?
Yeah, and that was nice. We always thought, especially after Saturday when you saw True Marvel, we only punished about 3 lengths from Gin Martini in the Sandown Cup. Well, that Bastida bet True Marvel by about 6 or 7 lengths to start before at Canberra. So it gave us a good line for Sunday.
So, without getting personal, how was this plunge executed?
Well, I wasn't aiming for the race at the start of the season, but then when, obviously, we saw it down there, and I know this horse could stay all day, the owner that was there, Mick Ormond, that's quite a good story, actually, because his grandfather's brother was in Gallipoli in the light...
Sarge, can you just swivel a bit? The phone's just a bit sketchy. Can you
hear me now?
Yeah, just keep going. Yeah, that's a bit better.
Yeah, no, Mick Ormond, the owner's grandfather's brother, was at Gallipoli in the light infantry as well, when Phil Labasta was there, and he died there. So he said, I'd love to have a go at this race. So hence, after we qualified, that's why we set him for it.
John, Mick Sharkey here. Isn't that a great little side note that, and I really think it'd warm the heart of Bill Gibbons, who put the Jericho meeting together, because that was always his hope, that this race meeting would spur that little bit of interest in our history and our culture and tie it forward with the races. And what you've just described there is would be perfection in Bill's eyes.
Yeah, I'm going to actually ring him after this, and I've got his number. I've got it off Richard Callender, and I know he's in hospital. I hope he'll take the call and just go over it with him, because I think it's a great concept. I mean, it's just going to get bigger and better, isn't it? And fantastic day, and fantastic for a rider like Daryl Horner that rode it. I didn't have a rider for the horse, and of course I don't know the jump riders down there, and good friend of mine's Clayton Douglas. I phoned him and he said, look, Sarge, this guy rides work for me. He's honest as they come. He's fit. He said he'll do what I say. I'll tell him how to ride it and put him on. So hence, that's how he got the ride.
And Clayton Douglas gave Daryl Horner a lovely big hug in the mounting yard afterwards, like they had pulled off a little bit of a mission as well. So just back to your owner and the plunge, which I'm interested in, because there's always a very good bookies ring down there as well. So was it a betting app, on course, tote, national tote assault, and did you get in on the action as well?
I was just here at the betting in this, Sydney, and there was obviously, I had some friends, and the owner was down there, and they say, I haven't been to the pool, but I will be after this. They had a bet down there with the bookies, so they say it's a strong bookies ring there too, and a great atmosphere. So I'd love to be able to train jumpers, actually, because I trained a lot of jumping winners in New Zealand, but of course being in New South Wales we can't do it. So it's a shame, because I'd be down there with jumpers, you know, just like tomorrow. I love them.
John, Matt Hill, congratulations, a terrific win yesterday. You talked about the Jericho Cup was a name at the start of the season because you knew the horse could stay all day, but this horse was going around in races over a mile and a half. So what signs did this horse give you that the 4,600 metres was his go?
When you start to train these stayers, and we haven't got the greatest facilities for stayers that ran, we're not knocking it because it's not four jumpers or saying that distance horses, but when you can gallop them and just long work over two or three rounds, and they come in and they go and pick grass, you know, they've got the capacity to get over the trip. And, you know, I'd work them a round or two, then pick up different gallopers, mates on the way, and they'd just come with them for a while, then he'd pick up someone else and he'd carry on. And it just showed that he could get that distance. And I think he got there on the day, and, you know, he had to be fit because it's... It's quite hard how it goes up and around and around those tracks. It's hard, and they have to learn, have to be quite agile as well.
What was it like as a viewing experience as the trainer? Because it starts backwards and goes up a hill twice and then goes funny directions, and then they come this way, not that way. And I early crowed, I backed your horse, and my 19-year-old was there, and I looked at him at about the 1,000-metre mark and said, this thing's going to absolutely blank in. And so I was confident a long way out, but was it hard for you? Because it was like watching a horse on a roller coaster.
Yeah, Daryl did say too, the horse lost a bit of ground at each of those tight turns and going over the crossings. He lost his position that first time down the hill and round. He was a lot closer, but at least he put him to sleep. He took his medicine and then worked him in and had him challenging at the right time. So seemed to work out, but now he's been round there once. It's a hell of a help, obviously. But he's quite an agile horse. He's not a big horse, he's medium size, and he's not a big clumsy horse. So that probably helped him as well.
Can he jump at all, John?
Yeah, he jumps extra well. He does. He does. He'll probably end up, I'll obviously keep my own a leg of myself, and we'll race him here for the next couple of years, but he'll probably end up, I'll probably get Clayton to do him down there and Daryl to ride him in the jumps when he eventually gets down there.
So what's his aim now to recalibrate after a 4,600 metre race? So what are you setting for next?
What's he running in next week?
He's going to the paddock. He's back tonight, both of them, him and Jim Martini, and he'll go to the paddock on Wednesday and have a nice break.
Well, Gin Martini was the other great result through the Sandown Cup, wasn't it? A horse that I think some people were a little bit on the fence as to whether she'd run the 2 miles out. She was very strong, though, through the line, wasn't she?
Yeah, it wasn't. I was never worried about the distance. I was worried about the track first time.
Okay.
Usually, if I was going down, say, for a Caulfield Cup or something, you'd be down there and galloping on the track and learning and to get round those that turn as well. And Craig said she was never really that balanced until he always felt that he straightened her up and got that gap that she started to really hit the line. So it wasn't a strong field, but it was a good strong win over 2 miles, so that helped.
Could she be an Adelaide Cup-style horse for
that,
the new
that
year?
That could be a nice race or, you know, whatever race like that. And, you know, she'll come back tonight. And she might even, if she does well, she might start in the Christmas Cup here at Randwick in a couple of weeks over 2-4. Or she'll have a break if I'm not happy with it.
Seems like you should be training down here, Sarge, with a few hills and jumpers and a bit of warnable action and so on. When do you make the move?
I'd love to, but the weather's knocked me around down there every time I go down. The blood's got too thin now. I'll have to stay up here for anything.
Hang on a minute. You live in Sydney for the last 6 months and you're talking about the Melbourne weather.
I know. We have had it terrible. You did, right? But, no. I like your big tracks down there. That's what's the help that I think that we miss here in Sydney is we haven't got many options for big tracks for certain types of horses.
Now, you better get down to this Jericho Cup next year. I hope you haven't missed your chance because it's an extraordinary event. And do you feel like you're kicking yourself for not being there?
Yeah, well, why I wasn't there is I fly out today to New Zealand. I've got to walk my daughter up the aisle. She's getting married in Queenstown. So that was the only reason I would have been down there, don't you worry, but I'd still be there and celebrating. But
by the sound of it, you might get there in May, John.
Yeah. That'd be good if I could.
The weather will test you then.
Yeah,
exactly right. Exactly right. He is a New Zealander, I think. Hey, Mike Moroney walked his own daughter down the aisle in Queenstown about 2 weeks ago. Is this like a constant booking for New Zealand horse trainers at Queenstown, is it?
Yeah, I think we get a discount down there. They give us
I think you must get a group discount. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Hey, Daryl Horner, your jockey is on the line and he's about to join us. Just before we let you go, what's your final pat on the back words of congratulations to the great Daryl Horner?
Yeah, no, it was a great effort. I didn't speak to him long the morning of the race. He'd been at the gym, and I just said, look, probably get on speed somewhere and just go to sleep and follow the right horses. And he obviously listened to Clayton Douglas and other people down there how to ride him, and he rode it to a tee. He's just got a very level head and just worked out perfectly. So, no, I couldn't thank him enough. He came, went out of his way to come and ride the horse and work on Friday. And he also ran Jim Martini, so he's obviously got good hands because he helped both of them win.
All right, well, he's about to join us. Good luck with walking your beautiful daughter down the aisle in the next few days, Sarge.
Thanks very much, guys. Cheers.
John Sargent there. Well, Daryl Horner's on the line. Well, there was some nice words from Sarge there. Dazzler?
Yeah, no, it's nice to hear someone of John Sargent's stature talk about me like that.
Teaming up with a trainer interstate like that, and as Sarge just said as he was closing out, that you went up and rode both Gin Martini and Vestida. What's that like when he's sort of not on the site and you're giving feedback? Do you have to be particularly careful with a stayer, or is it just knowing that they're in a good rhythm and a good place?
Yeah, it was more just, we just wanted to tick all the boxes and, I wasn't going into too much detail. I was just, I actually just reported back to the Sarge's travelling foreman. Just making sure the horses travelled well and everything like that. His action was good, but like I say, trainers like John Sargent, they do this sort of stuff week in, week out. So it's nothing out of the ordinary for them, you know.
Take us through the enjoyment of riding in a Jericho Cup, because usually when you're going around the paddocks at the Bull, you've got a few obstacles in your way. It's a little bit more challenging, but it still must give you a great thrill to go around that course.
Yeah, it does. It actually rides very different without the jumps on it. Obviously, they're going a little bit slower when the jumps are there, and Just sort of talking to a few of the boys after the race yesterday, and yeah, rides a lot different. You know, those corners, those two corners when you go left and right, they come up very fast when there's no jumps there, but very enjoyable, and obviously everyone got around safe, so that's the main.
What were the moment? It was at about the 1,000 metre mark where I thought, oh, geez, yeah. this well backed favourite is second favourite is really humming into the race. But there was a lot that happened before that, Darryl, as well, where you had to nurse Batista around certain parts of the track. Were there moments where you had to just keep Batista, you know, sort of balanced and going, and then you grew in confidence?
Yeah, definitely. Like I said to John, I don't think the horse handled the course at all. He dipped and dived a couple of times, and the first corner he didn't take that really well after he got chopped out and dropped the bridle a few times, and then the second corner, when we come down the hill the second time, we go right, lost a bit of ground there, and I just held him together for another 50 metres just to get him balanced again, and then that's when I give him a slap, and I actually couldn't believe it. I didn't actually think I was going that good myself, and I give him a slap, and so much horse just grew underneath me, and it was about, yeah, probably about 1,000 that I was like, we're actually going all right here.
What sort of, how big is the feather in the cap for a, you know, a leading cross-country rider like yourself to win this race? It's only been around a few years. It seems to just be gathering this enormous respect and fan base. Is it in the jockeys' room with the jumps jockeys? Is it a race that you really covet?
I think most definitely. I think all the boys are pretty serious about it this year. You know, like, obviously most of the field was on 65, and it's obviously not easy for the majority of us to ride 65, and they obviously all went out of their way to really knuckle down and do the 65. And no, I think it was obviously a very prestigious race, and yeah, I think we take it very seriously.
So you had Gin Martini go round on Friday before her win on Saturday. You've had the big win with Bastida, $8 into $4.20. Surely there's a sling coming your way.
I won't say no if there is. It might cover some of the costs from last night.
Oh, hang on.
Stand
right.
By.
Righto. Last night. Let's go through it.
And so we've just bought an absolute mountain of McDonald's. We're just heading back.
yes.
Where was the kick on, and who was involved?
There was a few of them involved, but it wasn't actually too big. It was a bit disappointing, actually. Everything was closed in Warrnambool.
I tell you, the staff shortage was really evident down there. It was unbelievable. Hey, tell us, I was there, but tell everyone else about the atmosphere in the build-up. The half an hour before the race is quite moving, isn't it?
It is. I was actually shocked with how much of a crowd they got there. It's absolutely amazing. They obviously advertise it great down here, and I would push anyone to come down for Jericho Day. It was absolutely exceptional.
Well, that's the aspect, isn't it? It gives that Warrnambool community another bite at the tourist cherry, although a smaller time frame, but it parlays well into the summer months. And, you know, a nice day like yesterday, it sort of just gets people thinking about, you know, Christmas holidays and school holidays, and maybe we try something a little bit different. So it's a bit like the May Carnival, isn't it, Darryl? It gives you that other option somewhere else in Victoria to go.
Most definitely. 100%, yep.
Well, it was kind of a nice day for half an hour, and then it was a crap day, and then it was an in-between day. I'd never seen so much weather on one day, Darryl.
Oh, I reckon it was a great day.
Yeah, so a very sunny day for you. Just before we let you go, were you aware of how well-backed Bastida was?
Not really. I don't go mad into that sort of stuff. When I looked at the fields when they first came in, I think it was about $7, and I thought that was a good, pretty reasonable price, you know. But no, I wasn't. Actually, tell a lie. Brent Stanley told me he'd been backed off the map before I got on him, so that made me a little bit nervous.
Is that information you didn't need to hear at the time?
that sort of stuff doesn't worry me, but
Well, I'll tell you what, it might help with the potential sling anyway. It's not just the gratitude of the owners, but the what they took the bookies for as well. So you might be in for a massive, massive sling today.
Yeah, well, I might have to send my bank details around.
Yeah, no, absolutely. If you're not, you know, you've got John Sargent's number anyway. Hey, well done yesterday, mate. It was a great, great ride, and it was a terrific event, and you must be rapt to be part of it. So well done.
Thank you very much. Stuart.
Darryl Horner there, the Jericho Cup winning rider.
On RSN's Racing Pulse, this is The Verdict.
It is The Verdict. It's 3 minutes past nine on The Verdict. In the next, boys, in the next hour and a quarter or an hour and a half, I'm going to keep you here as long as I possibly can. Okay. We're going to continue to talk about the Jericho Cup. We're going to talk about the crowd. We're going to talk about the place on the calendar. That'll parlay naturally and organically, I would imagine, into talk about the Zipping Classic and the meeting and the pushing back potential of the spring and what all that means. Winterbottom Stakes, Japan Cup, Palili. Of course, the winner of the Winterbottom. There's a new maiden race series at Pakenham. Greater exposure to greyhound racing on racing.com, something that sort of jumped out at me. And I wonder what sort of a boost that is has been for greyhound racing, both on RSN and also on racing.com. And a lovely story with the picnic season kicking off on Saturday. If you want to have a word to us or contribute or have a go at Matt Hill and Mick Sharkey, 0416 90 50 52. Before any of that, I saw some photos before. Shark, you saw them. They were unbelievable, weren't they? Mildura?
Ah, yeah, Mildura. It's unbelievable, all right. Heartbreaking. You sort of think that you don't want a news item, like a big incident happens and it just floods the news, pardon the pun, for the next, you know, day, 3 days, 4 days, week, whatever it is. And then it sort of just drifts off a little bit as other things sort of take significance, i.e. the Victorian state election in the last sort of 10 days. The floods are still happening. You know, properties, towns are still impacted. And I think the situation in Mildura has just given us a big slap in the face and a reminder about that.
No, exactly right. And it's not an area that I normally think of when I think about flooding. But Jared Farley is the Mildura Race Club general manager, and he joins us to explain what we're talking about. G'day, Jared.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, the aerial shots, they're probably the only shots that can be taken because on ground level the situation's pretty dire, but it looks like a lake, basically.
Yeah, it's amazing out there. We don't have access, so we sort of can't get too many ground shots, as you say, but we do have a few cameras set up out there just to sort of keep a track of where the water goes and how high it's slowly getting out there. But it's amazing the amount of water that you can see from those photos that we've put up online.
Was this something that you knew? Obviously, you know it's coming, but you've had time to prepare and move assets and things like that?
Yeah, we did. So we've had plenty of notice up here. We spent probably Melbourne Cup Day being our biggest race day of the year up here. And then since then, we've basically been putting up all our assets up high and moving some machinery off-site. We've wrapped all our buildings and sandbags. And we've done everything that we possibly could to prepare and sort of hoping for the worst. About 3 or 4 days ago, there was no water anywhere near the race course, and we thought we may have overthought it and done a bit too much. And then, 24, 48 hours later, we're surrounded and then covered by water. So, the work we did put in the last couple of weeks is definitely starting to pay off now.
Jared, as Matty mentioned, Mildura is not a place that immediately comes to mind when you think about flooding. So is this a first for your race course? Has there been a precedent for this?
No, it's definitely happened before. So the rivers are probably a good 3 or 4 on, I suppose, away from the actual race course. 1956, 1974, we've had some flood incidents. Back before my time, and there was a stage there when I actually had to move a few of their buildings to the higher ground when one of those floods hit. So it has happened before, and the strange thing is, though, the water actually hasn't come direct across from the river that's a couple hundred metres away. It's sort of come around, weaved its way through some low ground and got to us through the back of the race course, which we sort of is a bit unusual as well.
Explain what happened, because I wasn't aware of torrential rain there, and I was talking to one of the trainers at Echuca a few weeks ago when they had their floods, and a lot of it isn't it can be a delayed reaction from waterways, even if it's weather that had occurred upstream or something like that. Was it a consequence of heavy rain per se, or was it more related to the water systems with a bit of over flooding of them from rain that had almost occurred elsewhere?
Yeah, no, definitely more related to the actual river system. So all the rain and floods that we've had further upstream here from Mildura in the Murray River, the majority of rivers feed into the Murray, and the Murray's just been getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So that water's made its way down through Echuca, Swan Hill, Robinvale. I've all experienced some form of flooding, and now it's here. I think it's predicted to peak tomorrow, so hopefully we're getting pretty close to the worst of it. But we just don't know how long it's going to hang around for. And you know, that sort of associated with all the rain we have had, the ground is quite wet, so the water's not going to soak away overly quick because obviously it's been quite a wet season. So a few factors have contributed, but it's mostly to do with the river system and all ending up here.
That red dirt, when you get to within about 80 k's of Mildura, the dirt changes. It becomes very outback looking. Is that a well-draining type of profile, or is that going to be a real problem?
No, the fact that we've had so much rain makes it a little bit trickier. A lot of clay and stuff around the race course, which doesn't drain very well either. So, being a wet season, a lot of those red dirt areas you mentioned are actually covered in half-decent crops this year for the farmers. So it was all looking quite promising, and hopefully they still get a decent crop off. But the clay out the race course, I think it's not going to drain through that overly quickly, and we just don't know how long it's going to sit there for. That's probably the scariest bit for us at the moment.
So I'm sure it's not at the front of mind at the moment. Jared, you've got a clean-up ahead, but what's pressing? What events do you have, or when do you race next?
Yeah, we had a few events out the race course scheduled for this time of year, but we've obviously had the organisers and we've moved them on. We don't race again until April, the end of April, so we have quite a big break over the summer months and early into next year. And then, it's just a matter of how long this water stays on the race course for. We can get our buildings cleaned up and repaired and patched and all that sort of stuff. But if we get a foot of water sitting on the race course for 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, we don't really know the damage that may cause, whether it kills the grass off and we get into a growing season that doesn't really occur for the Kaikouya grass. We don't know. We're a bit up in the air as what happens next, to be honest.
Well, Jared, good luck with it. It sounds like it's still yet to completely peak, so I'm sure everyone's bracing themselves for that. And then hopefully when it subsides, everything becomes a little bit easier. But thanks for your update, and we'll keep in touch.
Yeah, thanks for taking the call, guys. Have a good day.
Yeah, that's bizarre. Mildura, all I think about is dryness.
Yeah. There was a calmness on Jared's voice, wasn't it? Because they knew there was impact coming, but they had that time to prepare for it. And to move key assets and whatnot, machinery and all that sort of thing. But it's the forgotten flood now, as it sort of the water moves its way through the system and around the state. Now, Todd Woodbridge was tweeting a couple of days ago about the Mildura Tennis Club as well. It was inundated and made reference that, 15 years or so ago, it held Davis Cup games. That's how good the standard of those courts are. So, and you see it and you think, oh, yeah, the floods are still happening. So
it's amazing.
It's important to keep it front of mind.
It's amazing how you can have floods without rain.
Well, that's it. Yeah.
That's what he was talking about.
It tells you how much is in the system and how much did fall that month or so ago.
It's got to go somewhere, I suppose.
Yeah. Like a rising tide of a river. So very interesting stuff there. Guys, I wanted to have a chat about, in general terms, this is the... Obviously, the pairing up of a weekend of the Zipping Classic and the Jericho Cup, and whether they complement each other, whether there's some sort of crossover that diminishes either or one or two, and I'm not really sure. So I wasn't at the Zipping. I was at the Jericho, and it was amazing. It was the atmosphere, the build up, the light infantry was there all day, and they had a recreation of the Charge of Bathsheba, and everyone got into it. The crowd cheered, and the blending in of the Whaler horses, who were a constant presence, and the race horses, and the last post, and everything was magnificent. The crowd was good, but to be perfectly honest, I thought it might have been better.
Yeah,
I don't know what the official...
Righto.
The weather was a bit average. It was a bit inclement. Look, the crowd was okay. I'm not saying it was down, but I think the next 3 years is going to be interesting to see if it can realise its true potential and whether there's the marketing increases. I'm not sure whether it should be completely the job of the Warrnambool Racing Club to promote a cultural event like the Jericho Cup. I think Tourism Victoria should play a role. I think everyone should understand that it's a race meeting beyond racing. Mm. And CRV, I think, should probably, I don't know what role they play, but I know that Racing Victoria provides the prize money, but that's where their role ends. It's a very significant role, but Warrnambool Racing Club does all it can. But there's a limit to that. And to me, it felt like a very local, regional crowd without a lot of massive buy-in from beyond the region. So... Mm. And again, I'm not knocking it because it's an amazing race and an amazing concept. And it was a great day, and the crowd was really into it. But I'm not. I hope the crowd can continue to build, is what I'm saying.
Well, it's hard on a Sunday when Monday is a working day and a school day. Like this, life goes on, right? And it's 4 hours away for most people, so it's not an easy commute down to Warrnambool. The conversation then is, oh, well, is it better placed on a Saturday? But is the card strong enough?
Well, you make the card strong enough.
Yeah, is it strong? Well, that's if you have it as a standalone.
Yeah.
If you run it as the, you know, hand-in-hand with the Saturday meeting, so people are already having a punt, it's on, you build it up, you have that dual broadcast aspect through racing.com, it makes it a weekend away for people. Mm. Maybe that helps. Yeah,
I think you're right. And look, we were talking off air about how big, at least via the pictures, the Wodonga Cup looked. But of course, Wodonga's a public holiday in Wodonga, and they've got 2 days to recover, Saturday and Sunday. Mm. So the crowd was enormous. So I think you've touched on a really good point there, Mick. Would it stand alone on a Saturday, the Jericho Cup, as a finale to the spring?
I know the club, in an ideal world, would like to do that. I'm a bit with Shark, though, whether... The Jericho's attraction, the first priority is not the quality of the racing, it is the quality of the event.
And you touched on it, has to be at Warrnambool as well. Bill's always touched about that, hasn't he, because it has to be through the paddock, so which I understand. Mm. So maybe it is the right weekend. The zipping on the Saturday, as Mick touched on, as the finale. We could say goodbye to the stayers for the year and then have the Jericho on the Sunday. Maybe it is perfect where it is.
Yeah.
But which means it's hit its ceiling, and is that good enough? And because I've got more, and personally I think it can be one of the biggest cultural events in Victoria and the most important thing that racing's done for a long, long time, because it brings people into racing via something other than wagering,
And that's a great thing.
Yeah. And so the entry point is so important, but it's a tricky one because
that racing's responsibility though? Do you get the RSL more involved? Do you get Tourism Victoria involved? There must be other entities if you want to turn it into a cultural event and market it as such. It's not just, if we market it within racing, we know it exists, but you need to give it a broader scale.
Well, maybe it's not racing's responsibility. Maybe you're right. Maybe the club can do what it can do within the boundaries of racing. Race Victoria has its role with prize money. Not sure what CRV's particular role with the Jericho Cup is, but maybe, as you say, it's up to other entities to get involved to elevate it higher. And maybe you're right. Maybe it is the RSL. I think it really is Tourism Victoria that has to be sold this race by racing and say, listen, this is... Mm. I know you're probably not automatically jumping up and down with interest because of racing necessarily, but look at what it does. Look at how we celebrate the history of the country. Look at the involvement of the light infantry. Maybe we can get the pony clubs involved to hold some sort of a gymkhana. Maybe that's the way itself.
Yeah, and this is the next phase of the event, isn't it? Like Bill Gibbons has got the concept up and going. He's got momentum behind it. But if, you know, the circumstances of his life at the moment or anything go by, like he's not well. He's not the man that has to drive this forward. It has to be handed over, as it is at the moment, to Racing Victoria and the Race Club at Warrnambool and everything else to drive this forward and to maximise his vision. And
for
I think it should be owed to Bill to do that, for getting this up and going and to make it the best it can possibly be.
And there's that little link between, celebrating or remembering the veterans and what happened back then to racing and the youngsters that are getting involved in racing, and that group of people from, say, 20 years of age to 40 years of age that aren't that knowledgeable of what happened, and they should be, of what happened in war times, but they've got horse racing as that link to find out. And I think it's a terrific event to link it all together. They talk about the Anzac Day parade, how that's slowly withering away, and it's up to the youngsters to get involved and keep the tradition going. And maybe this is the same thing.
And the youngsters did resurrect the tradition with Anzac Day. Remember the images of granddad's not there anymore, but the grandchild is and all that sort of stuff. So when they played the last post, it was amazing. Like even babies stopped crying. You know, that was the effect that it had. So pardon me, there's definitely... It definitely can get bigger, but maybe it is up to something beyond racing to make this event bigger than it actually is.
And there was, as I say, talk about the event, you know, being run at Flemington instead of Warrnambool, but you do have to run it through the paddocks. That's the reason, that was the inspiration of Bill Gibbons, and I agree with Mick. Bill's got it to here. It depends where we want to send it next.
Yeah. No, absolutely right, absolutely right. But it was a fantastic event, as it has been. And
had a great race. I mean, round the turn, there were seven or eight horses still in with a hope at the end of a 4,600-metre flat race. You don't see that too often.
There was a... I hope I'm not embarrassing the lady who fell off in the recreation of the Charge of Beersheba, where they charged up the straight with mock swords, and then Rick McIntosh cottoned onto it. He said, oh, hang on, this is very much like Warrnambool in May. One's come down, or something like... This is very much like the Battle of Beersheba because there's been a casualty. And then the rider, everyone was going, oh, no, you poor thing, you know, in the army clobber and all that, and the hat, and then the helmet. And then everyone started roaring cheers of approval. And by the time the rider got back to the mounting yard, she was whooping it up to the crowd, and the crowd got into it more and more. And no, it was fantastic. So,
and Ham, you were there, so I can ask you the question. How many spectators or viewers were there with the army gear on? Because that's something we don't see at racetracks, bar for Anzac Day perhaps, but the actual outfits, which is such a special part of the day.
The light infantry, and I didn't get to the bottom of what role the line infantry plays in 2022 in Australia. I mean, when I think of it, I think of 1913 or something like that. So, but we interviewed Cherie Johansson, who was the head of the army band, and she's the clarinet player, and she joined us for about 10 or 15 minutes. And she led the band was playing all through the day, and when people came in and they were doing like ABBA songs and things like that, and no, YMCA, and everyone who was walking the gate was dancing to YMCA and that. So, oh no, it's quite kooky. There's a really kooky element to it, which is absolutely fantastic. So do you think that the zipping on the Saturday and the Jericho on the Sunday snugly fit? Do you think that works?
Well, I just think the spring has to have an end. We can't keep going. It's got to end at some point. And I thought, and as I say, I think because Vow and Declare won on Saturday, there was something romantic about that. It was a tribute to the Stayers in a way that a former Melbourne Cup winner was able to salute. But yeah, maybe it is a great end at late November to have the zipping meeting, which I'm sure the Melbourne Racing Club would agree is probably still a work in progress in many respects, and then the Jericho on the Sunday. At this stage, I don't know what the options are.
Well, you know what? Let's take a break because I want to come back and have more of a chat about this idea of putting the Spring Carnival back and what the pros and cons of doing it might be. I know on face value it's such an automatic yes because no one's taking any notice of the cricket, no one noticed the golf was on, the weather's better.
But it just hasn't been.
No.
That's the one thing. The one premise I wouldn't want to change a spring carnival around is the weather.
No, exactly. Exactly right. Anyway, we'll flesh this out after this break. It's 22 past 9.
Placing their opinion on the line, it's The Verdict.
25 minutes past 9. We'll talk about the Zipping Classic meeting on a number of fronts. And look, I think in general terms, I think it's been a great idea. I think the crowd was there. It was about 9,000. I think that's probably solid enough for this time of year. I think a bit like the Jericho, though, I think they'd like to continue to build it. I'm not necessarily sure that the trainers have leapt on board with keeping horses going, the good horses going right up till then. I think, Shark,
what happened? Every dance. That's the thing.
Well, what happened on Champions Day is, to my eye, the Private Eyes and Animos, they'd peaked. I think they had peaked on that day, and now we've got this meeting 3 weeks later. Is it going to have to be something that the trainers and owners get their heads around, how to keep a horse going for the zipping meeting?
Yeah, maybe, but it's worth noting that Vow and Declare did start his preparation on the 13th of August in a 1600-metre race at Caulfield. So it's fitting that he was the one that won the zipping, the full stop on the spring, because he was there when the doors opened for the spring back on, would have been Lawrence Stakes Day. So he was a fitting, worthy winner. He'd had good form, all preparation, and it was good to see him get back in the winner's list for sure. But you are right about picking targets. And that's the beauty of it. There are so many options now during the Spring Carnival, both in Victoria and in New South Wales, I will say. it should be easier in a way for trainers to identify races for horses and say, right, this is the goal, this is the target. Rather than, oh, we're going to just start here, see if we end up in the guineas. If we don't, we'll freshen up. We'll try and come back again in a month's time and try them in the sounding guineas. You can't do that. You're not going to have the, or not, well, not that you can't, but not many horses are going to have the capacity to have multiple grand final points throughout a preparation. The smarter trainers that identify the payoff opportunities and save horses for those goals, they're the ones that will do the best thing by their clients.
The administrators and the trainers who now support the idea of pushing things back and not having breaks and seasons and so on is that the trainers are now more adaptable than they used to be and can dive bomb the races when they need to and just keep the horses ticking over. Well, the evidence at the moment is that they haven't adapted to that, to my eye, because they didn't keep the horses going for the Zipping Classic. And that meeting, if so, and it's not being critical, I just think it's a something that will probably evolve in years to come. But right now, I think the trainers at Flemington said, no, we're basically pulling up stumps with the good horses. And if a race meeting is going to be the curtain call for an entire carnival, as it's promoted to be, it's probably entitled to have two or three very good horses there.
Yes, I know exactly what you're saying. But the question is do you have to have the good race horses there to create an event? And the Melbourne Racing Club have gone all out with the Zipping Classic. They've moved it to Caulfield. They had the entertainment there on the lawn, which you don't get at Sandown. They had what I call the doof doof music, but that's an old fashioned thing to say, but they have the DJ on the lawn and things like that. They had the advertisements in the paper. They had the page three girl with the horse, the model with the horse. They gave it every possible chance and they got a crowd there. They got a young crowd there that looked like they were enjoying themselves, who probably don't even know who Vow and Declare is. Now, this is the part of the sport now that we have to, as racing purists, deal with, is that they are events. So you could claim Oaks Day is not one of the strongest race days, but we still got 50,000 people there because it's Oaks Day. It's an event. Do we have to have the best horses there on Zipping Classic Day?
Well, to be honest, with Oaks Day, they got 41,000 there, and it was half the crowd it was 15 years ago. You could look at it two ways.
It used to be 100 there. Well, not 100, but you know, but you see, get 80 or 90 at Oaks Day.
But also back then, so 1997, when there was 120,000 people on Oaks Day, we also used to go to Princess Park and stand there on the concrete and not see a football game unless the ball was right in front of you. People want comfort nowadays,
and
people are going to work work days. So you can. It's a perspective thing, isn't it? If you turned around and said you're getting 45,000 people to a race meeting on a work day.
Didn't people used to go to work on a work day, though?
What was that?
Wasn't it always a work day?
Yeah, but I think things were more flexible. It was seemingly a cool thing to do in Melbourne was to go to the Oaks on Oaks Day. I know what you're saying. But my point being is I don't know if the concentration on these events so much is about the quality of the horse anymore because 60-75% of the people at Zipping Classic Day weren't one bit near the mounting yard. They weren't really interested anyway. And they were too busy, you know, going along.
Well,
horny and all that sort of stuff.
But are they going to be recruited by racing? Are they going to be horny transients or horny recruits, according to you? Anyway, look, I'm supportive of the concept, but I just think there's wriggle room. There's room to improve with both the Jericho Cup for a crowd. I think they could get another 1,500 or 2,000.
But see, even what you were saying about the Jericho Cup, it's not about the quality of the race. Let's be honest.
It's a way different beast than Zipping Classic.
It's a 4,600-metre benchmark 90, isn't it?
Yeah, but
so
but,
it's not
but
about
it isn't.
The race,
but
yeah.
It is an event.
It's not about the race.
It is
an
event.
It's an event.
It's the event.
It is an actual event. Anyway, look, I just think what will probably happen, because I think old habits die hard. People adapt in time, and maybe when we're looking back at the Zipping meeting in 3 years' time and the Jericho meeting in 3 years' time, the Jericho might have 10,000 people there, and the Zipping Classic might have Animo there. Who knows?
But themed race days. They're not a totally foreign thing.
No.
Like, and the Jericho obviously has got its very significant theme. Think about what's under your own nose, right? Was Zipping Classic Day, if you're using MRC as a point of reference for the conversation. Their foundation race day, really significant day. And it has a distinct feel about it. You know the charity involvement, They do a great job promoting the different charities in the week leading up, not only across, you know, .com, but through their own socials, explaining why they're supporting these different groups and why this is an important thing for the club. Could Zipping Day turn into a themed race day? So I'm not sure what that theme could be, but maybe, you know, it transitions to be a, yeah, full stop on the spring. Yes, sure. But maybe there's a feel-good theme that's associated
totally,
with it.
Totally, totally.
The Country Cups, I think, are terrific because the regionals see what happens at Flemington and Caulfield and Moonee Valley over a 4 or 5 week period, and they think we could get involved in that. I'm very worried about forgetting the rest of the state. You know, places like Cranbourne was a fantastic day. The crowd was up. They had a band after the last. Racing was good. Ballarat, the weather was atrocious, but they still got a really good crowd there. You know, I just worry that all we look at are numbers and then we forget
And a metro lens
and
as well.
Spreading the sport to where it should be, and that's all the racetracks in the bush.
This does take us to the next conversation, Maddie, and I do want to flesh that out. There was an interesting... It's a popular opinion now, I think, with administrators and race clubs and so on, is that we have to take this vacant space and we have to stretch the carnival out. This was a little bit of a chin wag on after the last yesterday.
This is a day we have to really promote, I think, going forward. It's perfectly placed. The weather finally turned. It usually turns at 2 or 3 weeks earlier, but, you know, it's usually Cup Week or most likely the week after Cup Week when the weather turns in Melbourne. So there is some clear real estate. Apparently there was cricket on. Nobody in the world knew. There's just 3 weeks there that we need to own in racing, and I think going forward we need to just continue to try and grow and promote this 3 weeks post Melbourne Cup carnival.
So that was Ben Asghari on the wrap, actually. So to my mind, what happens, and you just touched on it, Matt, in the 3 weeks after the Melbourne Cup, is the racing moves to major regional centres, which are major suburban, outer suburban growth areas. They've got their own clubs with their own ambitions and their own right to enhance themselves. You've got Cranbourne, Ballarat, Pakenham coming up. You had the Jericho Cup. And to me, it then translates into the picnic season, the Christmas season, the party season at Moonee Valley. Like, I think the perception that racing, we have to take this real estate that's empty. It's not empty. It's full of different racing that has that are potential growth areas as well. More. So, yeah. So what do you guys think about the push to push the carnival back? It's sort of,
there's this, I don't know, it's just this phrase that's thrown around, isn't it, since the Volandis reshuffle of their carnivals, right? Oh, we've got to own the space. We have to own the space. And I'm not having to go at Ben Asghari. It's parroted by just about anybody who wants to talk about,
sound innovative,
you know, vacant carnival areas. You know, we've got to own this space. Own it for who? Who are we owning it for? If we extend carnival time into the summer months, into December,
are they saying we start later and finish later, or start at the same time and stretch by 3 weeks? I'm not sure what they mean.
I don't understand it. That's why I think it's just words, right? Like, who are we owning it for? Does the general public care? Are they hungry for more racing? Are they sitting there saying, wow, it's December, I'd really love to go to the races and watch a Group 1 on the weekend? So you know, or is it just this mentality, because we're all in the bubble, we're in this racing bubble, oh, we've got to own this space, can't have someone else owning the space, cricket, soccer, basketball, lawn bowls, oh, they can't
I'm
own
saying
it.
We like, do own the space, own but we're not aware of
we
it.
We do, like, we've got product on. How much more product do you need?
And is wagering the only barometer, Matt?
Oh, it seems to be. That seems to be all we hear about is the wagering, and they'll tell us that wagering keeps the sport going, but then there's also horses, jockeys, strappers, trainers that put the sport on, and they're not machines. You know, they are not machines, and the more that we just hear the numbers, we are an industry, and, you know, they talk about owning the space. I thought the biggest sporting event in the world's on at the moment, isn't it? How much newspaper, you know, unless we pay for it, how much newspaper space are we going to be getting if we run the Caulfield Cup now?
And you mentioned the weather and the parlay. I think when I was working at the Herald Sun, the mindset about holding the audience was that you make a fairly seamless and quick transition from football to racing. You go from the grand final to the Turnbull Stakes to the Caulfield Guineas. If the idea of pushing it back also means starting later to take advantage of the vacant space and the weather, does that mean a gap between the footy and racing that might not necessarily might be too wide for, to parlay into racing taking up the slack. I'm not sure. Shark, you mentioned something in the ad break about if you leave, they might find something else to do if you don't automatically capture their attention after the footy, you know.
Absolutely.
Or maybe Matt did.
But see, Melbourne, I reckon we're sort of, we're almost, it's in our DNA what we have. You know, you have your footy, then you have your racing, and then we're supposedly moving into cricket. And what also is interesting about cricket is they've just about done their dash, haven't they? They have just, you know, they thought they owned this space, if we want to use that expression,
well,
with
they
2020
went out of,
cricket, and
they
gone
went out
too
of
hard.
Season. Yeah. They went out of season, and no one watched.
And it got stale.
They and that's the same time of year we want to take. On. They went out of season. So what the gurus are asking us to do is to go out of season and extend ourselves. There's risks in doing
that. There's an element of greed to it that I don't like. And that's what it feels like. Mm. It's that greedy, we've got to have all, we want this too, and we want that, we want this. It's all in the name of more turnover and whatever else. This is real wagering focus. Doesn't seem to be a lot of conversation about how much the participants can produce, how much the good horses, in inverted commas, of which there are not there is not an endless pool, how much can they sustain?
And I keep coming back to the issue about that they're not machines. The one issue that I'm interested in is the trainers will tell you that they don't get decent tracks to train on leading into the spring because of, you know, winters. I reckon the seasons are back now a month or two. So we get to August, September, we've still got wet tracks, and the trainers really struggle with that. So at the coalface, there is an argument to suggest that, you know, we can get the better horses going later. But as you say, Mick, it's going to have an effect on something. Already this stuff is affecting Perth racing, I think. Mm. You know, Perth has been smacked because of it, and it's just going to affect everything going forward into autumn.
And well, there is a pattern.
Yeah, and but we're very short-term view. Like, yes, we're in a La Niña cycle, probably third in the row, arguably, and we've had a wetter spring, wetter summer months, and people get in that habit. You know what's coming next? El Nino. And that'll be a drought phase. And then we won't have rain. And people, you know, the tracks will be good in the middle of winter, like they were probably 6-7 years ago, Matty. Remember that period? And there were no wet tracks. And people complaining about that.
It's
and
an
we'll go into
sport,
a drought phase. And now people will be saying, well, it's, you know, it's too dry. Well, and there'll be a different conversation for that period while that weather's impacting us in that phase of life.
But funnily enough, these races have been run in that order at their time of year for 150 years.
Yeah.
So what's wrong with them?
And we're not saying don't innovate. I don't think any of us are saying don't innovate. But there's innovation and there's change for the sake of change because you think, oh, well, we have to do something. Sometimes you don't have to do anything.
Well, and just my final word on it, the Cranbourne Club, the Pakenham Club, the Ballarat Club, the Jericho and the picnics and all that are kicking off, they are entitled to their market share of the racing audience, and that's what they get at this time of year. And they are community growth areas as well that create next generations of interest. They are entitled to have their own entry point. Anyway, that's my rant on this, and I think we've sort of, you know, had a decent say on it.
Gee, you wound us up there, didn't you?
I didn't mean to. It must have been the caffeine I slipped in. It's 20 to 10. We're going to take a break. And then talking about the picnic season, there's a lovely story with Henry Jaggard, who rode his first winner at the Ballarat Picnics on Saturday. It's an interesting story there. He's an Essendon kid who's had the thrill of riding his first picnic winner. Michael Falgate's going to join us to reflect on the Japan Cup as well, so plenty more coming up.
On RSN's Racing Pulse, this is The Verdict.
It's 15 minutes to 10. A few comments on the Twitter, SMS feed. To be honest, most of them sort of suggesting that maybe...
That we've got no idea.
No, the opposite, actually. So I won't rub salt into the wounds of those who want to change it. But, hey, it was... And look, one of the things that we love at this time of year when the weather warms up is the picnic circuit. And they've had an absolutely devastating start with bad weather. We will check to see if Balnarring is going to get underway on the weekend, but I know that they've had some issues as well. But the Ballarat, the picnic season, because they were so far behind, they went into emergency mode and they ran them on the Syntho at Ballarat on Saturday. And it was a lovely opportunity for a few to get going. And one of those was Henry Laggard, who rode his first winner at the picnics. And what a massive thrill that must have been. And Henry joins us to bask in the glory of the Syntho win. How are you, Henry?
I'm good, gents. How are you?
How did that feel?
Yeah, pretty surreal, to be honest. I sort of didn't feel anything as I crossed the line. I didn't know what to think, but coming back to the mountain yard, it started to sink in a little bit. I had my mum and sister and my brother and a couple of mates there, and, yeah, it was pretty exciting.
So, Henry, tell us about your experience before Saturday. How many rides had you had? And, take us through it.
Hey, it was my first race day. I've ridden track work for a couple of years now. Did the required jump outs and trials that you have to do to get ticked off and all the paperwork that they get you to do these days. Got all that done, and then, first day at the races.
So was it your first ride?
First one got scratched in the gate, so that wasn't a very good start.
A misfire.
And the second one, I threw the whip away at the 400 before I could even use it. So I got back to the rooms. I was all but about to pack my bag and jump in the car and head home. And then, it was me. Second ride or third ride that was I was down for that we ticked it off.
So what's the background then, Henry? What inspired you to get in the saddle? What's your love of racing? Where did it all start?
I always loved watching racing as I was a kid. Me pop was a keen race goer, so I always sort of had me $3 quaddy on a Saturday, tried to make a buck out of it. And then I finished school. I finished year 12 at St. Bernard's and in Essendon, and sort of didn't know what to do. I had a couple of mates at road work and that, and I sort of fell into it, I guess. I made just a bit of part-time work when I started, and then as soon as I finished school, I sort of started working full-time and went from there.
Maley, you're a gun local cricketer.
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
Mick Comerford's tipped you in. He said he was a gun.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
What about AFL? Do you play footy?
Played footy. I was always a little bit small, got pushed around a little bit too much for my liking.
So you work for Saba San and Gay Waterhouse and Danny O'Brien and Yagi Racing. So you earned your stripes in recent times?
Yeah, I've had good experiences at all the stables I've worked at. I started my first full-time job was with Gay, and I spent time down here, time in Sydney, travelled with horses. I didn't ride as much as when I was there, but when I went to Danny's, I went down to his beautiful 13th Beach property and sort of honed my craft there, ride and work, and then I went 2 years there, and then I moved down to Mornington. I didn't really know anything about the picnic racing circuit, to be honest, until I got down there and a few of the boys sort of said, why don't you have a think about doing this, and I did, and got everything that I had to do done, and here we are.
The next 6 months for you is going to be like a magical mystery tour, because as Hilly and Shark know, we sometimes convene at Woolamai.
Oh, indeed.
We do convene under the trees at Woolamai. And then you've got Swift's Creek and Buchan and all these amazing venues with these beautiful country drives. Are you ready for what's in store?
Yeah, I think I am. It was good to have a nice roomy track the other day to ride on. Could sort of stay out of everyone's way and not make a fool of myself. But I've watched some replays of some of the tracks there, and there's some pretty gnarly ones. So I think it'll all be a bit of fun, and it does look pretty picturesque, all the joints. And I've heard that they're always great days out.
That's the first time I've heard
gnarly.
A jockey use the word gnarly in his lexicon, which is fantastic. So if you do see a couple of, rather portly punters on the other side of the fence at Woolamai, Henry, portly say, you slaughtered that one, Henry, you know exactly who they are.
If one of them sounds like he's called a Melbourne Cup, you'll know it's Matt Hill. So has it been frustrating with the delay to the season? Have you been like a Ferrari in a garage with the garage locked?
Yeah, I guess you could say that. I was pretty keen to get going. I sort of had a couple of rides ready to go, and then, but more frustrating for the for all the trainers and volunteers that do so much work to get the horses ready and the tracks ready. They're probably the ones that would feel it the most. So I think that's the main thing. They do such a good job at getting all the places ready for the circuit, and that I feel for them more so than me.
Do you want to ride at the pros one day?
I'm probably a bit heavy for that.
61 kilos, I think you got down to, didn't you? On the weekend?
Yeah, I rode it was high weight races on the weekend. It's definitely at the back of my mind. I'll give a season here, see how we go. I've always thought about going over the jumps too, which might be an option, and then go on the pros. So I'll take it as it comes at the moment, but I'm pretty, I had such a blast on the weekend. I'm happy to keep having fun and see where that takes me.
Well, there's nothing better, and as much as the syntho was lovely, I think you'll enjoy the gum trees and the rolling hills,
the undulations.
Yes, if you stand at the 400-meter mark at Alexandra, you'll probably faint. But anyway, don't worry about that. Hey, good on you, mate. Well done. It's terrific. There's always a new injection of riders in the picnics, and you're certainly one of them this season. And look forward to seeing you hopefully at Balnarring next week if it gets underway.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you very much, Jen.
Henry Laggard there, who I had a look through. It's amazing how the ranks keep replenishing at the picnics. The names always change, don't they?
And our good little mate, Peter Hutchison, he looks after the young picnic riders, doesn't he? So it's a great day out. It's the best day out, isn't it? You get out a sausage in bread, have a bet in the sun, under the trees at Woolamai and places like Balnarring. You mentioned Swift's Creek. Yay's a beauty. Talking about an undulating track, yay. And the jockey's room, of course, is the golf clubhouse or the golf course in the middle. Just great places.
It's just relaxing. I think that's why it works as well. On the back of, if you're a racing fan and you go to the carnival and you got the suit and tie, the shirt, whatever it is, even if you're in the public, you're making a little bit of effort with your appearance, generally speaking. And then you sort of have that couple of weeks off Broadway with the provincial meetings. Then you roll into the picnic season and you can literally turn up in shorts and thongs and,
but they're
t-shirt,
quiet gems, aren't they? Because
bets, couple
good
beers.
crowd, yep. Fantastic.
It's an easy day. Yeah. It's an easy day.
And a lot of the city people, this is again going back to our previous discussion, the city people who have concluded their Melt Cup Week and all that sort of stuff, they love the idea of getting out of town when the weather warms up. They don't necessarily want to come into town. They don't want to stay in town for the city racing when the weather warms up. They actually want to get out of town. They want to go to the country cups and the picnics. That's something that occurs. Like the crowds at your Woolamai's and Healesville's and so on, a lot of them are city folk who have ventured through the valleys and that. So that's another argument for staying out of the way with the city racing when it comes to the weather warming up. We might take a short break, Mikey, or we might get Michael Felgate after 10, I reckon, because I think we're running out of time for that. So we might take a short break, come back. These guys are going to hang around.
If we are starting to do toad updates for the first at Kyneton, Mickey, you know we've stayed too long.
Hey, we were doing dogs the other day. He cut me off because we had to go to
We're
going to
roll into the second round of heats at Shepparton tomorrow night, by the way we're going. We're going to take a short break and come back. Michael Felgate's going to join us to reflect on the Japan Cup. We're also going to have a look at the winter bottom and maybe pick the eyes out of the meeting at Caulfield on Saturday, which we haven't really done yet. So we'll take a break, Mikey, and then we might continue on after 10.
On RSN's Racing Pulse, this is The Verdict.
Rothfire Elite Street come down the outside, so does Kiss on All Four Cheeks. Thistle Test is rattling home, so's Palaley. Kiss on All Four Cheeks, look at Palaley. Kiss on All Four Cheeks, Palaley. Palaley lunging, Palaley. Palaley claims Group 1 for Godolphin at Ascot. Palaley.
Gee, a good caller, Darren McCauley. He's got such a signature voice, hasn't he? I think he's the best race caller in the...
Well, I'd have to agree with you. I think he's fantastic. The Prince of Callers, we call him.
He is. He's got such a silky voice. He's such a dude as well. He's such a great dude. We're going to talk to Michael Felgate just after 10 o'clock
what, and
about
I'm
the
not?
Japan Cup. You're a dude. You're a real dude. You bring your own Bundy and Coke to non-Bundy restaurants. Gee, it was a busy race, the winter bottom, was it?
And it was.
I was talking to the Perth guys this morning on the radio, on the wireless, and I was reminding them of what a great jockey Ben Malham is, because Ben Malham spends a lot of time in the naughty corner or the injured corner, and when he comes back, he bursts back very quickly, doesn't he? And he sent out a nice tweet after the win. He's such a great jockey that no matter how many self-inflicted or other wounds he has, he bursts back so quickly before anyone can see him as unfashionable.
For sure. He keeps us entertained, that's for sure. Terrific ride, and in hindsight, beaten 2.5 by Rockin' Horse in a champion sprint was a pretty good form line, Mick.
It was a pretty good form line, wasn't it, really? But it just goes to show you again, these good jockeys, you can plug them in anywhere, right? And they, on a good horse, on the right horse, and they can read the race, and they work it out, and they make it happen, don't they? You know, they've got that innate ability to just dial into the moment, to that job at hand, and get the job done.
Did he find a new strength for Pilili? Did what I reckon may have happened in the
cold ride, maybe?
Cold ride. Mm. That's what I'm saying. Like, just really cold ride. And I think that was what maybe let him unleash.
It's a really interesting horse, Pilili, because we've seen him in the past during his three-year-old prep sort of lob up first four or five, cruise into a race and just bang his opposition into the ground with a really good turn of foot. He was able to do a similar sort of thing at Caulfield, I guess you'd say, when that gap came and he had to sort of force his way through and the explosivity was there. But a stone-cold ride from a wide gate, the turn of foot was, I guess, more pronounced. It looked more pronounced because of the sheer margin of ground that he had to make up on those leaders,
mate. And the second horse, Kiss on All Four Cheeks, is the 1,200 its hitting zone, do you think, or more 7 furlong?
Yeah, I think that 12 to 14. Well, 14 against the mares, she sort of gets away with it. Against open company, I just wonder. But she's super strong at 12, isn't she? Like, that seems to be that really punchy sweet spot for her. Local horses ran well. This will test you. Hot Zed's been very consistent. Sort of listed Group 3 level sprinter there. And I thought Rothfire ran a good race. He wasn't beaten far, a length and a half. Maybe, you know, we forget this horse, what he's been through, the injuries that he's had, the setbacks that he's had. Rob Heathcote's team, to be able to nurse him back to a standard where he can contest Group 1 races and run so well in them. You know, it was only the winter months a few months ago that he looked like, oh, actually, this horse might get back. And then the spring was a further step forward. This was at the end of a long campaign this season. I think Rob's still got cause to look forward to Brisbane next year with high hopes that he can get another good one.
He's solid now, isn't he? I've got all the jockeys' comments for it as well. Like even down to 10th, the jockeys were wrapped with the horse. That's the nature of the race. But they
astrologist
all ran,
was
they
brave.
All ran well.
You know, yeah, he was, he's tough.
He's done a good job, that horse, hasn't he?
What a fun horse for Nathan Bennett and his crew. And there's a really good syndicator who gets a whole range of different people in, does it a different way. But they get longevity and consistency out of horses like the Astrologist, and that's why you buy into those syndicates for, is to race a horse for a long time.
I think
we have
to get going, otherwise we're going to be doing tote updates for Warrigal Dogs tonight.
I think. 10 o'clock, time for a news update with John J. Hollywood Bowden.
Placing their opinion on the line, it's The Verdict.
A war of them across the track. Danon Beluga finds it. Here comes Charriar. Danon Beluga, Trinia, and Veltrazende up the inside. Mike beat the ball. Up the inside, trying to rattle home Veltrazende. Damien Lane, and flashing home late, Valorizul. Valorizul scoots to the front. Charriar second. Veltrazende third. And Daring Tack fourth.
That was extraordinary, Ryan Moore, on the winner there. And Michael Fellgate was amongst the 173,000 or however many were there in Japan yesterday for the Japan Cup. And he's on the line. Our man in Japan is on the line. How are you, Michael?
Very well, Matty. Good morning, boys. It's been a phenomenal week we've had in Japan so far. Yesterday was an experience that I've never had before at a race meeting. It is so different to what we experience on our big days, but it was absolutely phenomenal, and it all culminates with Race 12, the feature of the day, the Japan Cup, and as you said, what an unbelievable ride by Ryan Moore, and again, it was the locals who finished in the first five, and interestingly, though, it was international jockeys who rode all of them. The first Japanese jockey home finished in sixth place, and so it was a day where they said it was a weaker Japan Cup, and it was almost a day for the internationals, but once again, the locals were too strong.
Michael, we'll talk about how great the ride was in a moment, but the one thing I took from a trip to a Japan Cup was that the day is quite peaceful, isn't it? They know how to do racing over there. There's not a lot of noise between races. Everyone just goes about their business. They even have a lunch break between, I think, races 6 and 7. They do. They have an hour gap between races for lunch. And then the last race, though, as you mentioned, with 150,000 people, the noise is just remarkable.
Matty, it's exactly right. It was almost a surreal, bizarre feeling because this is their biggest race day, or one of their biggest race days, and it is so quiet. But Japan is the city of silence. It's all about being respectful, not too loud. And there's a clapping of the crowd when the starter waves his red flag to get the horses ready to move in. And then it's pretty much silence until they start to yell with 100 metres to go. But the course is packed. There is not one piece of air. Hardly anyone is drinking. No one dresses up. It's all about the horses, and it's all about betting. It is
quite remarkable. It's not a social occasion for you to get together with your friends. It's you're there to see the horses. You're there to try and find a winner. And when we were walking out, there's a statue, and Sharky, you'd remember this mare called Vodka.
Yes.
Who was the first filly to win the Japanese Derby. I think she won the Japan Cup in about 2009. And there were wreaths of flowers, and there were carrots and apples. And I said to one of the guys that was with her, I said, what's all this about? And they said, they're just paying respect to Vodka. So she died in 2019, but the racing fans still loved her so much that they bring flowers and carrots and apples just to pay respect to her. And that kind of sums up the whole Japanese attitude to the thoroughbred and the horses.
And is that, more broadly speaking, is that something that you think could ever be replicated in part or encouraged somewhere like Australia, or is that a deep, that attitude of respect?
We often pay respect to Vodka.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, some more so than others. Is that something that's so deeply culturally Japanese that want to be respectful that it's unique to that jurisdiction?
Yeah, no, you've hit the nail on the head, Sharky. It's not something that we can introduce into our racing, because it's not racing; it's their continual lifestyle, and that's how everyone here is brought up. You will not meet a more respectful, politeful culture in all walks of life, not just racing. Everyone goes out of their way to help you and to make you feel welcome. And we were walking out of the track yesterday, and we were saying it's a little bit different to leaving Flemington over Cup Week, because there was not one bit of litter. Everyone was orderly. Everyone was happy. There were no massive queues. No one was pushing each other. It was simply phenomenal. And the crowd all gather for that Japan Cup, because it had been capped yesterday. Obviously, there's still some COVID issues. So I think it was capped at around about 70,000, when they would normally get 100, 120,000. But every single person on course made their way out to the front on that flat stand where, Matty, you would remember Matty Hill. And they all just tack in and watch that. And when we got to the track, the other thing which I found astonishing was the first race is at 9:30. So 9:30 in the morning, race number one. And then they finish the Japan Cup as race 12 of 12 at 3:40, because it gets quite dark here very early at this time of the year. But the crowd slowly built up throughout the day. And as you said, Matty, they have a lunch break for about 55 minutes after race number five. So they have a little bit of entertainment. People can then go and have something to eat. And then everyone regroups and comes back, because they don't want to take time out from focusing on the punt and the horses to go and get food while the race meeting is actually occurring. One thing that doesn't change, though, is that Peter Moody and myself went out there on the Friday and we had a look, and it was great. We got a full tour of the course and the facilities underground. It's this huge tunnel system, which you might see on some of the television replays, where the horses basically make their way everywhere underground. And they actually, it's so long, but they actually give trainers and the handlers a bike to ride with the saddle to where they go and have to saddle up, because it is so far. And as we walked out on the track, I said to Peter Moody, I said, gee, she's firm. He goes, yeah, this is like a good two if we're lucky. And the rail was the place to be, and that's how it played on Saturday. And one of the lovely officials came up to me at the track yesterday. Obviously, they've been watching our social media. He said, just one thing. And I said, yep. He goes, we say it's fast, not firm. Can you not say the track is firm? Just say it's fast. So wherever you go, there are people always trying to paint the message that they want, because it was like a road. But that's what we know Japanese racing is always about.
Absolutely. Interesting you mentioned the horse tunnels underground. For the first time I heard, I think it was Matt Cain mentioned, that the new horse stalls at Caulfield will be subterranean. And I think that kind of means, I'll have to get that clarified as well. Michael, just on the, I know there's this amazing reverence of the horse over there, and that's what their breeding industry has been like in recent years, of breeding champion to champion to produce something of a higher level than seen before and so on. But the ride of Ryan Moore, I think even Ryan Moore, who never gives anything away, would have to regard it as possibly his greatest ever ride. Was that the feeling after the race, that Ryan Moore just rode the most amazing race?
You had to go back and watch the replay, because when we were watching it, we actually thought Damien Lane was going to win the race. And then it darts through the middle. You go, where did this come from? And interestingly enough, because Peter Moody and Sarah Moody are on the tour with us, Sarah Moody said, I've got a message from one of our old farriers who used to work with us, who was working at the stable of Bella Azul, and sent the message through that it is working the house down. We all need to be backing it. It would have been one of the greatest tragedies beaten
if it didn't get that gap. But it was one of the great rides, and it's his second Japan Cup. Damien Lane had a great day. He rode a winner earlier. He rode a great race on the third place getter, and it was a day of the favourites. The favourites were all up there, and it wasn't a fast, hard-run Japan Cup that we've seen in previous years. So Ernesto and a couple of the other internationals didn't have the best of runs. So there were a few hard luck stories, but there's no doubt that the winner, Bella Azul, was the best horse in the race. And that's its first Group 1 win. It started its racing career on dirt, interestingly enough, because it had some leg issues. And we were talking to locals about how firm the track is, and they said, look, because of the firmness, there is a lot of wear and tear on the horses. They don't have long, deep campaigns, but they never spell over here. They never put them out of work and sit them in a paddock for 3 or 4 months. They are always kept in work. It's just a matter of whether they reduce their working, load during that time. But there are no spelling facilities here in Japan. Obviously, there's a lack of land and the population and everything here. But I thought that was fascinating. And the horses, obviously, are just elite, the calibre of them. Much better than anything we have locally. And I mean, Peter Moody is very interested about how they train their horses over here. Everything is televised, so there are no, and when I say televised to the quality of a race day for every piece of work, not just trials, every piece of work. There are two training centres which hold about 2,000 horses each, and they're about 2 hours away from where the Futu racetrack is. And they have a stabling complex there where most of the horses will come in the day before and they will stay there, so they don't have to worry about traffic concerns or anything. So they do things a lot differently, and there's what they call the jockey jail over there, which you would have
jockey
heard of
jail
as well, whereas all
for
the
bad rides
go into well, that's right, they go into lockdown 48 hours before the races, all phones taken off them because they want to make sure that there are no integrity concerns or no perception of integrity concerns. So all the jockeys are locked up in the hotel on the racetrack 48 hours before big race day.
Wow. So talking about jockeys, I know Matt's got a very important question for you in a moment, Mickey.
Have I?
I know there's a certain photo you wanted to ask Michael about. But just very quickly, you talk about Damien Lane. You know, by all reports, he's a bit of a god over there. Are you getting that vibe that he's made a really big impression?
Well, there's no doubt. We know what he's been doing here for a couple of years now. And, of course, he won a Group 1 the week before and went so close in the Japan Cup yesterday. He's revered over here. And he's you can see why Damien Lane does so well over here, because he's that quiet character back home. He's almost the perfect Japanese prototype, because they don't like loud and gregarious. They like people to be reserved and respectful, which is exactly what Damien Lane is in the way he goes about his business. So you can see why he's so successful. But this is the mecca of international jockeys, along with Hong Kong. And we got a tour of the jockey room. And I wasn't allowed to put anything up on social media, but because they race here regularly, the jockeys, it's not like a jockey room back home, because they're going from racetrack to racetrack day to day. They actually leave all their gear there, and they personalise it. So Christopher Mayer's little spot and his photos of his children has all the group ones that he's won. They get those little almost like dressage pins that they give the horse and the jockey, and they're pinned up everywhere, all these group ones. He had an almond eye deck chair with almond eye cushions on it. It was spectacular. Quite phenomenal.
Hey, just before we let you go, you mentioned that they love respectful, quiet, demure people, and I was just thinking, God, Moody, how's this going to work out? And there was a photo you put on Instagram, Moody looking quite mischievous and you guffawing and Jackie sort of looking back at Moody as if he's done something naughty. What was the circumstances there?
Well, we're here courtesy of Plan Japan, and Peter Moody has come along as one of the tour guides. So it's a food, and also wine tour, as well as the racing side of it. So we have had a lot of fun, and there have been a few occasions where we've been told to keep our voices down, but Moody has had a ball. He's been very cheeky, and he's embraced it when we did the sumo wrestle across earlier. And they don't see too many people the size of Peter Moody around here, but a lot of the locals would come up and have a chat to him. And you'd mention, oh, Black Caviar's trainer, and it's funny how it resonates, because like, oh, Black Caviar trainer over here. So there is that crossover of Australian and also international, knowledge of racing over here. But it's been great fun. The food,
The people, the atmosphere, we're just going for a walk now around the area of the hotel. We go down to Kyoto on the bullet train a little later today. It is, for those who haven't been to Japan, you've got to get here because it is just phenomenal. All parts of life. And the weather, it's been quite mild considering it's almost winter. It's been probably warmer than what Melbourne was when I left. We're looking forward to getting back, guys, and we missed the Jericho yesterday. I didn't hear you earlier. What kind of crowd did they get at the Jericho?
Solid, but would like to see it build in the next few years. So, yeah, certainly not 75,000 like was at Fushu. And Kyoto, you'll love. My sister's been to Kyoto a couple of times. She says it's absolutely gorgeous. So, thanks for the cross, Michael. Looking forward to you returning to this chair. Desperately looking forward to that, to be honest. So, this 3 hour show's a, the 3 hour show's a real ripper, mate. All right. Enjoy.
See you, mate.
Michael Falgate there. He didn't actually explain what the photo was all about for an impromptu shot like that.
It was rather an impromptu shot, wasn't it?
It was
beautifully taken. It was beautifully taken by the photographer.
Well, hey, guys, just captured the moment.
Before we go, there was an announcement.
Are we going?
I thought we were just...
You can hang around and talk to Mr. Blackshaw and Mrs. Delbridge.
Yeah. I want to do a tote call.
Just your impressions of this. I think this is a lovely one because so much racing focuses top end of town and all these pop-up races and so on. But I like this initiative from Racing Victoria. I'm going to get Andrew Jones in tomorrow to have a chat about this and probably be rebuked for our comments about extending the Spring Carnival. There's a new series called the Sportsbet Future Stars. It's going to be exclusive to Pakenham on Thursday night, running 12 weeks from January 12 to March 2. Each maiden race will be worth, almost drum roll here, Matty, 75K.
Wow, that's great.
75K, fantastic. And the final will have a $300,000 prize, 1,200 metres to 1,400 metres. So my type of people, you know, those who have the less successful horses or the horses just kicking off to give them a return and a bit of encouragement, the maiden horses, 75K in a summer series of Pakenham.
The final will be a really good race because you'll have, 10 or 11 horses off last start wins worth $300,000.
Yeah, how can they be eligible for a maiden final? Because by the time they get there, they're not maidens anymore. So,
a bit like the Greyhounds.
A bit like the Greyhounds, yeah.
You were at the Greyhounds that day.
Well, I loved it. I love the Greyhounds. Started off calling the Greyhounds and always been very fond of them. So that was a good night. The only thing is they got a really bad serve with the weather. The rain hit about race three. But the Melbourne Cup itself was a great race, and the showdown the race previous was fantastic. Well, she's fast winning.
What good sort of a crowd did they get there?
Good crowd. Yep. Yeah, good crowd. But a lot hidden away in the grandstand. It's a great facility, Sandown. So they're in the
grandstand. Is there
grandstand.
Any chance you blokes will nick off?
I'm wanting to do a tote call. When's the first at Healesville or something?
I've got admin work to do today, so yeah, I'm sort of looking for any excuse to do it.
You did loiter here with Mytho for an hour or so.
We just like spending time with you, Matty.
No, thanks. Hey, thanks, guys, for popping in. It's been a spirited exchange, as it always is. The blood flowed to the creative juices got going. All right, good on you guys. Hey, good calling
for
the next week, Matty.
Good
admin for the next week, Shark.
Yeah, thanks, Matty. See you Friday.
Adam